Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Scarlet Leadership Monthly Lunch and Leadership Conference Call. For today's call, we have Doug Stone, who Joe and Mary will introduce momentarily. But if you would like a copy of today's slides, send me an email at tom@scarletleadership.com, and I'll get those right out to you. So without further ado, I will turn it over to Joe Scarlet.
Well, good morning or good afternoon, everybody. We're glad to have you with us for our, I think, 11th conference call this year. And today we have, as Tom mentioned, Doug Stone with us. Doug was with us 2 months ago talking about difficult conversations, which he has been doing for our Leadership Institute for 7 or 8 or 9 years now. And his book, Difficult Conversations, is one of the key reading pieces in our executive development program. And Doug has now written a new book called Thanks for the Feedback, which I've started to read. I haven't finished yet, and it's really fascinating. It's a great, great topic, and we're going to get into that in a couple of minutes. But first, I want to talk about two different things. We have an emerging leaders class, which is not the executive class. It's one level down. It's an 8-day class, lasts for nearly a year, one day a month, and that starts on November 11th. So if anybody is interested in that class, we still have a few openings there, so contact us at scarletleadership.com. Additionally, our next conference call will be on Thursday, December 11th, and it's going to be a surprise. So we'll let you know a little bit more about that over the email in about a week or so.
Waiting to hear from Santa.
Waiting to hear from Santa. Well, as soon as Santa lets us know, we'll let you know, too. So anyway, that's Thursday, December 11th. Today is Monday because of scheduling issues, so with that, I'll turn it over to our hostess, Mary Fink. Mary?
Thank you, Joe, and thank you, Doug, for being with us. We enjoyed the call so much in September that we wanted to have you back because we felt like we should talk about the new book. There is so much information in that book, and we talk about feedback and how it is. I remember years ago talking about feedback being the breakfast of champions, and it was a gift. And there were so many things about it, and yet we still sort of get that knot in our stomach when somebody says, can I give you some feedback? So why do we dread it so much?
Yeah, well, it's great to be here. That's a great question. People do talk about feedback as a gift, and there's a way in which it is, right? So I think one reason that receiving feedback is such a challenge for most of us is that it sits right at the intersection of two key human desires. One is the gift part, and that is that we want to learn and we want to grow. We like mastering. We engage in hobbies because we like getting better at things, whether it's learning a musical instrument or playing a sport or collecting things. And we like learning. We like growing. We want to get better at our jobs, right? No one, if you said to a group of people, how many people want to improve at pretty much anything? People will say, well, sure, that's an important thing in life. So far, so good. The problem, of course, is that we also want to be loved and approved of and respected and accepted just the way we are now. And when we get feedback and when someone's trying to help us learn and grow, it's very easy for us to wonder what exactly this feedback means. Are they, do they accept me the way I am now? And what does that mean for how I'm seen and for our relationship? So those are some real challenges, that intersection of those two different needs. And you can't wave a magic wand and make that go away. But you can learn some skills that help you manage that tension between those two needs.
And that's really where the book comes in. It's the first time I've read something that was really focusing on receiving feedback and not giving feedback. We've heard a lot about how's the best way to give it and does somebody, are you ready? Is it okay? Would you like some feedback? But receiving it is always the hardest part, being on the receiving end. So
it's the hardest part, and it's also, I think, it's the more important of the two roles because in our lives, it's great to get good at giving feedback, and people have probably taken a class here and there, and they've gotten better at it, and that's useful, and it helps organizations, it helps individuals. But the real leverage in terms of individual and organizational change doesn't come from the people giving the feedback. The real leverage comes from the person receiving it, whether they're open to learning and have the skills to engage in that conversation well.
Right. Before we move on about that, I know it's important to learn and grow, but is there any other way that's as good as feedback to get better without the pain?
Well, we learn lots of things in our lives that are not painful, right? Like, again, if you play a hobby or you have a favorite subject in school, you might just enjoy that. But feedback is often it's learning not just about, you know, mathematics or history or golf. It's learning about ourselves and the world. And so often what we're hearing conflicts with what we thought about how we were seen or how we see ourselves. And so really the only way to get that information is from feedback from others, and that can be painful sometimes.
Absolutely. So in the book you talk about some triggers that block our learning. What do you mean by truth triggers and relationship triggers? What are some examples?
Yeah, so when we get feedback that's upsetting, we tend to have these triggered, what we're using the word trigger to mean sort of that instantaneous emotional or cognitive reaction that kind of keeps the feedback out or makes it hard to understand. And, you know, if I ask you all, well, gee, what are all the reasons we don't take feedback? We'd probably have 1,000 reasons, and a lot of them would be pretty reasonable reasons for not taking feedback. But we've taken those 1,000 reasons, and from our conversations with many thousands of people, and just grouped them into 3 categories in terms of the kind of reactions that we have when we get feedback. So one category is what we call truth triggers, and this is just when we get feedback that we think is wrong. If someone says to me, you know, Mike, you talk too much at that meeting and you were cutting people off and you got to stop doing that, I might be thinking, you know, I wasn't at that meeting and my name is not Mike, so this is not feedback that I should be worrying about. It's wrong. And we get feedback all the time that we think is wrong, and it doesn't make sense to take feedback that we think is unhelpful or off target in some way. You know, we often, the variations on the truth trigger are, well, it's out of date. You know, I used to be that way, but I'm not anymore. Or you talked to the wrong people. You talked to people who don't like me. How come you didn't talk to other people who would have said nicer things? So there's lots of variations on this idea of the feedback is wrong. The problem isn't that, of course, it's not that we should be taking feedback that's wrong. It's the way that we come to the conclusion that the feedback is wrong, that we end up sort of jumping to that conclusion even before we fully understand what the feedback means. I'll give you a couple examples of this. Feedback often comes in the form of labels, very general words like, you know, that was inappropriate, or you've got to be more professional, or be more assertive, or be more empathetic. And when we're giving each other that kind of feedback, we're thinking, oh, well, I'm doing a good job. I'm giving feedback, and they heard the feedback, and now they'll take it into consideration and try to change. The problem is those labels mean almost nothing. It's hard to know what does it mean to be more proactive or more assertive. If you don't dig under a label like that, it's very hard to know how to actually implement that feedback, or it's hard to even know whether that feedback would be useful. I got they were saying, I received feedback that I was too organized. And I was, and they said, you know, that feedback is just obviously wrong, because how could you be too organized? What, you know, am I supposed to come in and just, you know, mess up my desk and tear down my bookshelves? And then they'll say, like, now you're just right. And that was an interesting example, because too organized, of course, is just a general label. And it does, on the face of it, it sounds implausible that could possibly be useful feedback. But when the person did dig under it with the person giving them the feedback, it turned out that they meant something very specific that would be impossible to know. What they were meaning was, you're very organized, that's fine for you, but then as a manager, your kind of organizational style, you impose it on the five people that work on your team, and the problem is they all organize themselves in different ways that all work for them, and it's causing a lot of strain among the different team members and different ways of organizing. So this is not to say whether that feedback is right or wrong, but just to say you can't even understand it in the first instance until you dig under that label, that very big label. I'll say a couple words about relationship and identity, and then I'll pause. So one kind of trigger when we get feedback is these truth triggers. The feedback is wrong, and we reject it for that reason. Another kind of trigger is relationship triggers, where we reject the feedback not because of the substance of the feedback, but because of who's giving it to us. You know, you're my parent should not be giving me this kind of feedback, or I don't trust that you have my best interests at heart, or I don't feel like you appreciate what I do. And so it's something where we're disqualifying the feedback based on not the feedback, but on the relationship. And then the third trigger is what we call an identity trigger. And this is about, again, it's not so much that the feedback is right or wrong, but it's the threat, when the feedback comes in and it feels so threatening to how we see ourselves, something important about ourselves that we just can't deal with it. It's too upsetting. So if you think of yourself as a kind person and you get feedback that you did something that really hurt somebody, you might actually think, well, it's true, I did do that, but you can't take it in because it's just too painful to sort of deal with and figure out. So one of the key ways to get better at receiving feedback is to be aware of these three kinds of triggers, truth, relationship, identity, and then to have a way to manage, a little bit of a way to manage in each one of those triggers.
Doug, if I can jump in for a couple of minutes here, I have a number of thoughts. In many of the discussions that I've had about performance, both giving it and receiving it, a lack of specifics just always creates misunderstanding. And I got to the point where I just demand, you know, somebody says something to me about performance, please be specific. And the same thing when you're on the one dishing it out. You can deal with specifics, but when talk about broad, I remember I used to talk about people's attitudes. Well, you don't have a good attitude. Well, that is, it doesn't mean anything. Give me a specific about, well, you were nasty to a customer on Tuesday. That's specific, and I find specifics to be very important. Now, as a CEO, it's a little difficult to get feedback because you have to go out and search for it, and then you have to try to sort out the what's really accurate and what's not. But you ask and you have to, at the higher the level you are, the less likely you are to get direct feedback, and the more you have to solicit it. And it's by asking questions and listening carefully and sometimes listening between the lines to figure out what people are really saying. And it's not always about your performance, maybe about the way the company's operating or the way your organization's operating, but those subtle pieces of information, you need to catalog and figure out which ones really make sense and try to add them up over time so that you're able to absorb the feedback. At the higher the level you are, the more people tend to tell you what you want to hear, and then you really don't get feedback.
Yeah, I think that's so important, that observation, for a couple of reasons. So as you move up in an organization, feedback, becomes more scarce. And yet, in some ways, it's even more important than ever, partly just for the CEO to be getting the feedback. But there's a second reason that taking feedback as a CEO is so important, which is that the biggest impact you can have on an organization in terms of becoming a learning organization, helping people receive feedback, is for the CEO to make a show of asking for feedback, hearing it, taking it, demonstrating that they value it. And there's nothing that impacts the other employees more than observing that in the CEO.
Another thing I learned along the way about getting feedback, whether you like it or not, at a high level, the only response you need to give is thank you. If you're arguing with the feedback, you stop getting it in a real hurry.
Yeah, exactly.
No question. Well, we've been talking mostly about negative feedback, but let's talk a little bit about some of the positive things that we might hear. And you talk in your book about appreciation, coaching, and evaluation. And evaluation can go either way. In fact, it usually has a little of both in it. But talk to us a little bit about the distinction between the three and then what each one really is. Appreciation is kind of obvious, but say a few words about that.
Yeah, so people will often say, well, gee, I don't get feedback at work. And you have to ask, well, what do you mean by feedback? Because feedback can really mean three different things. One of the problems that we have with feedback is we think it means one thing, but the person giving it to us thinks it means another, and before you know it, we're just having a confusing conversation. So feedback can mean, one thing it means is appreciation, and as you say, it's, the meaning of that is fairly obvious. So this basically says, if I'm giving someone appreciation, I'm letting them know that I appreciate the effort very often. It doesn't have to be the work itself, but it can just be the effort, or there's something I appreciate about something special that they did. It helps people feel that they're seen and acknowledged. People want appreciation in different ways. Some people want to hear it explicitly. Other people actually don't want it explicitly. They just want to, you know, they figure you appreciate them if you come in and ask them hard questions that you need help with, or you seek their advice. For them, that's the kind of appreciation they want. So it can mean different things to different people, but everybody wants it. The U.S. Department of Labor did a study a number of years ago, and they asked people about appreciation at work, and 92% of them said they felt underappreciated at work, and almost 50% of people who left their jobs voluntarily, in other words, they weren't fired, but they quit, cited appreciation, lack of appreciation, as the number one reason why they left. Not, I wasn't paid enough, or I didn't like the mission of the organization, or I didn't like my CEO. It was just lack of appreciation. So appreciation, whether in the workplace or personal relationship, is a huge deal. A second kind of feedback is coaching, and this to me is really the key kind of feedback. This is the feedback that you give somebody if you're just trying to help them get better. You're not judging them. You're not saying thank you. You're not saying no thank you. You're just saying, here's some ideas I have for how you can get better. And then evaluation. Evaluation is the kind of feedback that does rate us or rank us or judge us. And it judges us against a set of standards of our targets that we're trying to meet, or maybe it judges us against our peers, but it's some kind of rating that tells us where we stand. So a grade in school is evaluation, or many organizations have number evaluations at the end of the year. There's a few issues here. We need all three kinds of feedback. We need appreciation to feel good. We need coaching to improve. We need evaluation to at least have a general sense of where we stand. But very often in organizations, coaching and evaluation end up getting mixed together, and that can be confusing to people. If you're evaluating somebody and you're trying to coach them at the same time, the thing that they hear, the thing that is emotionally loudest, is the evaluation. So if you're saying, you really need to improve your performance, and so you're not going to get a bonus this year, and then you give them a bunch of ideas for how to improve, that's the coaching part, they're going to be focused on the evaluation part. So I think useful advice is to, have evaluation once a year or once a quarter, whatever it is going to be. But then appreciation and coaching can be throughout the year in real time.
Exactly. I want to go back to appreciation because I know we talk about that so much. Joe, do you want to say something about it?
Well, just based on my personal experience in our practice at Tractor Supply over the years, we believe that that recognition is the number one motivator, and just recognition for a job well done is a no lose proposition. And the more you do of it, if you want people to do something, they do it once. You give them a pat on the back, they're going to do it again. It just keep over and over again. At Tractor Supply, we tell success stories all the time, and the more success stories you tell, the more people learn how those successes operate and how they can achieve the same successes. So, you're appreciating somebody, patting them on the back, recognizing in front of their peers, and at the same time, their peers are learning how to achieve the same successes. So, those appreciation things are simply a win-win proposition in every respect.
It's reinforcing that we want people to continue to do. And everything we say or do is endorsing something, so we want to make sure we're endorsing the positive side.
Let me say something else, too. It's important that performance feedback be given regularly, not once a year. Nobody should be – if you're doing a very good job, when you sit down for your annual evaluation or semi-annual evaluation, there should be no surprises. It should be a culmination of the things we have discussed during the previous period.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of that is going to be coaching. Here's what I'm seeing. Here's how you can be improving.
Exactly. So we've had a little chat, and your feedback to me was what I consider to be extremely negative, with nothing positive there to soften it. And not really any coaching to sort of help get past the negative and get to the positive. So how do I deal with that extremely negative? Do I just shred the report or walk out of the room or say nothing and go home and stew over it? I mean, I know there's reaction and response, but what is the best way to deal with it?
Well, so we do get really negative and upsetting feedback occasionally, and the first thing I would say is it's normal. It happens to everybody, and there's no magic bullet there's nothing that makes negative feedback positive feedback, right? Mm-hmm. But there's a set of things that we can do that help us move away from the likelihood that we might be making the feedback worse in our own minds, that we might be distorting it. And so here on there, I'm actually maybe jumping ahead a couple of slides. I'm not sure if you're moving the slides along, but talking about strategies to dismantle distortion. We can come back to blind spots in a moment. One reason that negative feedback is so painful is part of it is just, it's whatever the feedback means. But the another reason is that we're making it mean something even worse than what we thought. And a lot of us have this tendency where someone says, oh, you were singing off key. And then before you know it, we're thinking they're telling us that we're a horrible person who can't do anything right. So if we get feedback, someone says, well, that presentation wasn't quite right in a couple ways, we make it about this presentation and then every presentation we've ever given and every presentation we're ever going to give, and then we make it about not just presentations, but we make it about everything that we've ever done. And if you're getting feedback about everything you've ever done, that's pretty upsetting. But the fact is you were actually getting feedback about this presentation. So the goal is to try to keep the feedback in the size container that it comes in. And, there's a few ways to do that. One is you can ask yourself, what is this feedback about? So the answer to that would be it's about this presentation. And then you can ask yourself, what is it not about? What are the things that are not in this feedback? And you can just sort of play cognitive games and say, you know, is this about any feedback, any presentations I've done in the past or any I'll do in the future? And no, it's about just this one presentation. So sort of finding ways to keep it in the size box that it came in. And there's a few other things I can talk about as well.
Okay. I know that when I have done sessions of 360 feedback with groups, and one of the things that I suggested that they do, because you read it, you read the whole report, you read the comments, and it can be 99% positive, and there's one negative comment in there, that's what you focus on. That's the one you remember.
Yeah.
So I always suggest to people, especially if it's something that is written, that they read it and they put it away for 24 to 48 hours and then read it again. And I can tell you from my own experience and evaluations from classes, you come back 24 hours later and look at it and it's like, oh my gosh, what was I so upset about? You know, it's one thing among so many others.
Yeah.
Part of it is the immediacy of it when we first hear it.
Well, that's right. And part of it is that physiological emotional reaction that we get from the kind of fight or flight reaction of like, I'm in danger. And our
mm-hmm.
body reacts to that negative feedback like a threat.
Right.
And then before you know it, we're off to the races. So coming back to it 24 hours later, it's the same feedback, but we don't have that triggered reaction anymore.
We're not
the
same.
We're not the same, exactly. So we can actually take it in and see it for what it is. Our bodies physiologically are wired to be very aware of danger, and that makes good sense in general, especially when we were, you know, evolving back on the savannas of Africa where we're seeing, you know, a saber-toothed tiger coming toward us. It's good to be afraid of a saber-toothed tiger, or it's good to be afraid of a snake. It's good to feel like if you feel like you're under threat, like you can, you know, you're going to take off regardless, even if you're, maybe it's just a false threat. It's better to just take off. But in the modern world, we don't have, by and large, we don't have those kind of threats, but we're still wired to scan that sheet of 100 pieces of feedback for the negative one that might jump out at us.
Mm-hmm.
And so consequently, we're constantly overreacting.
Exactly. Any other strategies for dealing with those distortions before we go to the blind spots?
Another one that I like is pretend. So if I get feedback, I will imagine that this situation is happening to a friend of mine. And, you know, if let's say I see a negative comment online about something about me. If a friend of mine got a negative comment online about themselves, I would just say, well, you know, why are you so upset about it? It's this tiny little thing. You know how people are online. It's not the kind of thing you should get upset about. You can learn from it if it's a real piece of feedback, but it's a waste to get upset about it. And then it's very easy to take that stance when it's your friend or your colleague that's getting the feedback. And it's a very reasonable stance. You know, don't bother with feeling upset by it, but, you know, learn from it if there's something to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And then see if you can apply that same view of it to yourself. And suddenly you're thinking, why is that such good advice for my friend, and yet I'm having a very different view of it when it's me? And part of the answer is that it's that emotional reaction that we have. But when I go through that process of imagining that it's someone else, I then come back to it, and it's in much better perspective.
Good. Excellent. And I think you're exactly spot on. Joe, do you have a comment?
Doug, that reminds me of a story going back probably 15 years ago. When we were a public company, you know, a few years into it, and these internet sites were up there all the time, and people were posting on the internet about, you know, the company's doing this right and the company's all screwed up here, and I was for a while reading those things, and I got hurt listening to them and so on. I finally decided, what am I doing here? it was a bunch of miscellaneous gossip, and there's just no point in listening to it, and stop listening to it, and no point in listening to unnecessary feedback.
Right. Well, exactly.
And today with social media, there is the opportunity for so much of that.
Yeah.
So much more than we used to have.
Right. Right. It's really, you know, again, you want to learn if there's real feedback in there for you. You want to learn from that, but you also need to be asking yourself, where is this coming from? What's the purpose? With the social media stuff or gossip and rumors, so much of it is, it's just recreation. It's not, it's not real feedback.
Exactly.
A lot of what I was taking to heart were former employees who, in many cases, were let go for reason.
Right. Right.
And you can't defend that. So let's talk for a minute about blind spots and how we uncover them, because a lot of times we see ourselves one way and other people see us another way, and both of us are right. How do we reconcile that? How do we uncover those blind spots?
Well, the first thing to do is to sort of learn about the topic of blind spots. And I think all of us would agree that everyone has blind spots, possibly except for ourselves. We feel like, well, you know, I understand that other people have these blind spots, but I don't. But of course, we all do, and they come from some very specific causes. If I'm in a room talking to people, everyone in the room can see my face. I'm the only one that can't see my face. And my face and my body language are expressing a lot of what's actually going on in the conversation. So if I'm talking to five people, there's five people that have information about me that I don't even have about myself. I know what I'm thinking, and I know what I mean to be communicating, but often there's a gap between what I mean to communicate and what I'm actually communicating, and often what I'm actually communicating is actually closer to what I'm actually thinking. If I'm somebody's boss and I'm thinking, well, I want to be nice, but this person just keeps screwing up, so I'm going to tell them really gently that they better straighten out, but I know I can come down too hard on people, so I'm going to be super nice about it. You know, in my mind, I think, well, the message they're getting is that I care about them and that I'm nice and they better straighten up. But the message they get is that I think that they're a screw up and I'm frustrated and angry at them, because all of that is in my face. And so if I get the feedback that I'm a difficult boss or I have disdain for my employees, I'm thinking, no, I don't. I was trying to be so incredibly friendly and caring and sweet. Well, that's not the actual message I'm sending based on some of these blind spots.
Before we go on to the next subject, Doug, this is your opportunity to send in questions over the internet. Or you can *7 during the call. Doug?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
So we've talked about blind spots, and we've talked about receiving feedback. Really, the book really is mostly about receiving feedback. But let's slide over to the other side now and talk about what I might do to be better at giving feedback with these ideas in mind about how people are receiving it. It should be that we can guide ourselves to be better at giving it.
Yeah, exactly. So a few thoughts here. One is just to remember that when you're giving feedback, you're also receiving feedback, at least in the sense that you're in a two-way conversation. I might have feedback for you, and if my feedback to you doesn't make sense to you or you disagree with it,
uh-huh,
we're better off talking about that than having you say yes, 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 and then go away and say nothing, and then, you know, do nothing. So it's got to be a two-way conversation. I think we often think, well, I'm not the one that needs to listen. I'm the one that's giving the feedback. They're the one that needs to listen. But you're not going to be very persuasive as a feedback giver if you're not also listening to the response of the other person.
True, and sometimes the listening is listening to the nonverbal.
Yeah, that's right. Even asking, just saying like, well, so I've just given you that feedback. How does that make sense to you? Or what aspects of that do you disagree with? Let's talk about where you disagree with this feedback so that we can see whether this fits for you or not. Something else is something we already talked about being the model. If you're the feedback giver, it's going to be hard for anyone to listen to you if you're famously uninterested in receiving feedback yourself. So requesting coaching and being clear that you value it and that you're taking it and learning from it is going to help you be a better feedback giver as well. Another thought here has to do with our own mindset and identity as feedback givers. People will often say to me, you know, I just don't feel comfortable giving feedback on this topic because I'm not good at it myself. So you know, someone might say, well, gee, you have to be more, if I'm giving my employee feedback, that they need to be more assertive. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I'm not very assertive, so who am I to give this person feedback? So it's good to think about those things in advance and work out your own identity questions in advance. When you give someone feedback, it doesn't mean, by the way, that you're better than them in any way, but it doesn't even mean that you're better than them at the thing you're giving them feedback on. People, you know, tennis players, professional tennis players have coaches who teach them all the time, and the tennis players are far better tennis players than the coaches are, but the coaches are good coaches. And when you're giving someone feedback, you can be thinking about fitting into that kind of role.
Right. And then the last bullet there, being aware of how individual differences collide in the organization. You know, our own personal style has so much to do with how we deliver and receive information. And
yeah.
I know in my own experience, I've had an opportunity to provide training for groups in those personal styles, specifically in preparation for them doing 360 feedback, so that the giver could be a little more in tune with how the receiver was going to hear it best.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, I think, one of the most important conversations that you can have, is just talking in both directions about our feedback giving and receiving styles. And it's not to say that the feedback receiver always gets their way, or the, you know, if they don't want feedback in a certain, on a certain topic, that you're never supposed to give it, but it's a negotiation. But it's enormously helpful to at least have that conversation so both people have a sense of, like, you know, here's what I'm working on, here's the kind of feedback that tends to help me. Here's a couple thoughts on how to deliver negative feedback in ways that make it a little bit easier for me to take in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then it's you're sort of coaching your coach. You're helping your coach be a good coach to you.
Exactly. That's a great idea. We have an online question. You mentioned the concept of feedback being real and the idea of feedback being unnecessary. Feedback is a culmination of opinions based on observation, which can be tainted by relationships, by circumstances, by limited perspective, et cetera. So how does one know when a given piece of feedback should be truly considered versus discounted?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I feel like I think the answer is you don't really know. I mean, I think the best we can do, so we all get feedback that, you know, let's say you're a salesperson and someone says, look, you've got to be warmer, got to come across warmer with the customer when you're selling. And let's say you've talked about what that means. You know, is that good feedback or not good feedback? It just depends on a variety of things. At the end of the day, if you have a good two-way conversation about it and you really have a clear sense of what they mean, you could just sometimes experiment with things. You know, you don't have to say, well, so I'm going to take this feedback and I'm going to do that the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. What you can do is say, okay, here's, this is what one person thinks, and it seems fairly reasonable, so I'm going to experiment with it for the next couple of weeks, and if I seem to be doing better, then that was probably good feedback. So it's not so much about making a final decision as just trying on feedback sometimes.
That's a great point, that sometimes it's a suggestion, and I might try this, and if it works, great. If it doesn't, then I might try something else.
Right, exactly.
Some other question that we have online, if I am not receiving feedback, how should I solicit it? It's a great, another great question. What if I'm not getting anything?
So I have a couple thoughts here. One way to solicit feedback, one way not to do it is to go in and say to someone, do you have any feedback for me? And there's two problems with that. Is one is the word feedback, again, is vague, so they might not even know what you're talking about, is, you know, what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
But you're asking them, you're making it too easy for them to say, oh, no, not really, you know, I think everything's fine. And they're not really convinced that you want feedback, and so it's just easier for them to sort of skip it. If instead you go in and you say, you know, I'm working on a couple things to try to get better at a few things. Is there one thing that you see me do that you think might be getting in my own way or that might be making it harder for me to accomplish that goal? And so the specificity of asking for one thing, you know, people, they may not be able to give you 10, but most people can come up with one. And then acknowledging that this is something I'm working on, this will help me. It tells them that, you know, you really do want this feedback. It's a favor to you, and you're really going to listen to it. So that, instead of saying, do you have any feedback? No. Okay, thanks. Say, is there one thing that you see me doing where I might be getting in my own way or making it harder for myself?
Yeah. Or maybe what is one thing? Yeah.
What is one thing? Exactly.
That's great advice. Joe, do you have a story for us?
I have a little story about feedback. I was just thinking back to something that happened a long time ago. When we were taking our company public, we had a tray full of 60 or 80 slides, and we were going to go out and knock them dead. And our investment bankers made us hook up with a professional speaking coach. And the professional speaking coach started by videotaping about 5 minutes of our presentation. And the feedback there is absolutely perfect. Once you see yourself on video, you become your own best critic, and you see what you're doing. And we were just, quite frankly, terrible. And we spent time with him, and we videotaped ourselves several times. And by the time we finished, we'd thrown away three-quarters of the slides and went out on the road and were very successful. But if you're involved in any sort of public work of any sort, anytime you can videotape yourself, you don't need anybody else's feedback. You give it to yourself and pretty clearly and accurately.
Right.
Exactly. That's a great story. It's a classic example of the kind of blind spots I was talking about where we just don't see ourselves, right? We literally don't see ourselves. And so when we get the chance to really actually see ourselves, there's a tremendous amount of information in that.
It's hugely helpful. I have *7 if you have a question from telephone land, and if you will write or type in your question and hit submit, we will get it online. I have two questions from online. It's a first and then a follow-up. The first is, are you aware of some companies that have a great culture of feedback?
Sort of. I'm aware of lots of companies that don't, but I'm also aware of lots of companies that are working hard at improving their culture of feedback. And there's a few companies that I won't name names that are sort of famous for their culture of feedback, but I think there's some complexity to that because there's also people in those companies that would sort of disagree with that assessment. I think in general, it's very hard to have a culture of good feedback. It's something that it takes a lot of work and dedication, and there's it really at the heart of it, it takes communication. Whatever your system is, whatever feedback, evaluation, coaching system you have in place, it's gonna rise or fall and be successful or not based on the quality of the conversations that are going on in that, you know, within that structure.
Right. And so I think the follow-up question you probably have answered, how do I start to build a culture of feedback, and especially if I'm not in charge of the company?
Yeah. It's hard. It's a great question. I think the first easy step is to start to get good at receiving feedback. I mean, that's not actually easy, but it's something you can do on your own. And so there you've made at least a little bit of an impact by modeling it. And then I don't want to trumpet my own book, but since it's the answer to this question, I will. I would get the topic out there. I think the book, Thanks for the Feedback book, makes the case that this matters. It's really important. It can help organizations. So you have a strong ally in the authors of the book.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Star 7, what questions do you have?
No questions. You're going to have to go back to work.
Got one coming in? Got one coming in on the phone. Somebody said Star 7.
Star 7? Anybody? Well, in that case, no Star 7s. We're going to have to go back to work, everybody. We want to thank you, Doug Stone, for joining us today. The name of the book is Thanks for the Feedback. It's everywhere in the bookstores today and online, so grab it. Doug does a great job writing these books, and they're very helpful and very easy to read. Our next call is December 11th, Thursday, December 11th, and our next class, the Emerging Leaders class, 8 class days over 8 months, all about basic supervisory skills, basic leadership skills, starts November 11th, a week from tomorrow. So if you have somebody in your company or if you'd like to sign up, we still have a few slots available. So go to scarletleadership.com. Again, Doug, thank you very much. Thank you all for joining us, and we'll see you again next month. Thanks, everybody.
Great. Thank you.